for this edition of Club Talk, our very own new club podcast. I'm delighted to have the opportunity of talking to Dr. Moira Hamlin, who was recently elected to the club committee, as many of you will know. Moira, wife, mother of two, grandmother, that sounds conventional enough, until you realise what she has achieved in her life, which has been dedicated to the full extent of the phrase, making a difference. Welcome, Moira. We ought to start at the beginning. Where did it all begin?
Where did it all begin? Well, it started in Malta, where I was born. My father worked for Admiralty at the time. And then when my parents split up when I was three, we moved to Scotland to live with my grandparents.
And there, I mean, you went to school in Scotland, did you, Moira?
I went to school in Scotland, and then I started a business degree in Dundee. And as part of that, I had to organise work experience. And I'd always had a hankering to go to London. So I got my work experience. They offered me a full-time job. And there I thought, do I go back to finish my degree or do I start a new life in London? Which I did. And then I went into book publishing, started off in a science publishers, and I worked my way up to being publicity and promotion manager of a company called Ward Lock, who did sort of early Mrs. Beaton's and nice general titles. And I used to do things like organise book launches and parties, and it was my job to get reviews in newspapers. So at the time, we used to go and have, you know, four-hour lunches with feature editors from Fleet Street and roll back into the office. I mean, it was the heyday of book publishing.
Oh, Moira, that sounds like a fun time that you were having there. But you didn't stay in publishing, despite your love of the work that you were doing.
I did. I think I got to about 25, and although it was very enjoyable, it didn't feel important. It didn't feel that it mattered. And when I got to the stage that I really didn't care if I, you know, advertised in Horse and Hound or Women's Weekly, I thought it's time to think about moving on. And I'd always been interested in psychology. In fact, I think as a teenager, I'd chosen as a book prize at school, Psychology Made Simple. And I really was interested in doing psychology, and I've had a vague idea I wanted to be a clinical psychologist, although I didn't really know what that involved at the time. And Birmingham was the only place that did a clinical PhD in the country, and so I went to Birmingham.
And there, I think you were 7 years, I think, taking your degree, which was wonderful. And also, I think you met your husband, Mark, at that time. But tell us about those years when concern in the community over mental health was not as high on the agenda as it is today. You were definitely breaking new ground, I think, at that time, and you were winning awards for some of the work that you were doing.
I think I've always wanted to make psychology accessible to people. Mental health, this is sort of early 80s, mental health was not really talked about, and most psychologists worked in a psychiatric hospital, and I just had a passion to try and bring something important to people's lives. So I did things like base myself in an inner city practice, set up groups for new mothers, stress reduction. And I also got involved in helping people come off tranquilizers, benzodiazepines. So I persuaded my health authority to, you know, fund a whole health centre for me, and I set up programmes. We even managed to get Princess Diana to come to the centre. And all the time I was seeing how could we make this accessible to people. And after Mark and I got married and we were having our son, we used to do radio phone-in programmes every week on psychology topics. And when my son was due to be born, we did a 26-week series following all the stages I went through and doing interviews. And we did that as part of a health promotion campaign, and we did research. And you know, on the day my son was born, the BRNB radio did live broadcasts. It was very strange. And he became known as the BRNB baby. But we won an award for that work.
Oh, I think you were really breaking new ground, I think, Moira. But you were in Birmingham all that time, during that time. But you subsequently moved to Somerset, still continuing your interest in health in the broadest sense. But what took you to Somerset and eventually to Cheltenham? But let's start with Somerset.
Well, we wanted the children to go to a school in Somerset, and at the time they were about 5 and 3, and I didn't want them to board, although when they became teenagers, you start to rethink all of that. But so we moved to Somerset, partly to be in the country and partly for the children to go to school there. And I got a job as a job share as head of psychology in Bristol. And I was working in Bristol and doing consultancy at the same time until I realised that I wanted to have more opportunity to make decisions rather than just work as a clinician.
And can you tell us a little bit more about some of the work that you did down there with the health authorities that you were working with?
Yes, I was very lucky to work with some amazing people. I did a number of boards like Somerset and Dorset Health Authority, and I worked with somebody called Serene Carruthers, who was a great chief executive. And we used to, all our board meetings, we used to look at what we called the dusty corners and services that really got overlooked, like stroke services, mental health, adolescence, and we're always looking at ways to improve things and make things better. So I did a number of those jobs on boards.
But certainly not happy with leaving things in the status quo, which seems to be something evidence of your life to date. But you were also a magistrate, I think, for 17 years. And again, joined a number of boards and committees as an advisor. And I think you earned a bit of a reputation for tough talking and cutting through the flannel and getting things done. So a little bit more about that period of your life, Moira.
Just a little bit about the flannel. I think being brought up in Scotland, I developed Scottish social skills, which is basically just diving in and saying what you think. And it's been my life task to learn the English way of doing things. I mean, you only have to look at Nicola Sturgeon and Boris Johnson to see a difference in styles. So it's been my life task to learn a sort of English way of obliquely sliding up to the subject. And that's what I've tried to do on boards. But I joined the police authority and as chair of the police authority for Avon and Somerset. And that was a great time because working with, you know, the top team in the police service, they're dedicated people to, they really want to make a difference and recognise the blight that crime has on people's lives. So being part of that was wonderful. But it also gave me opportunities. I was also deputy chair of the National Association of Police Authorities, and I worked then at a national level in working with the Home Office. And one of the things that was quite chilling, I remember going about early 2004 to MI5 for a counter-terrorism briefing. And at the time, you know, we weren't really affected in this country. And I came out of there feeling quite chilled because they weren't talking about if we might have a terrorism attack here. They were talking about when. And that really made an impact on me. And in fact, by coincidence, when there was the terrorism incident in Britain and 7th of July 2005, I was actually with the police minister at the time. I had a meeting. And when I walked into the Home Office for a 9 o'clock meeting, there were big screens up, television screens, saying there was a suspected gas explosion in London. And I went ahead, had my meeting, and it was in the middle of the meeting with the health minister that her officials came in and took her out to go to Downing Street. So difficult times.
That must have been difficult times, but it also has moved you slightly further away from the health sector that you'd been working in for many years, but by the sound of it, very, very interesting work that you were doing for the police authority. But more recently, after you left the role in the police authority, you were appointed vice chair of the board of University of Bristol. I think that's right. Was that also a rewarding role? Because very near to home to many of us, the University of Bristol, and yeah, some of the grandchildren have been there.
Yes. Well, Bristol University is one of the, it's in the top 50 leading universities in the world. It is an amazing place, and there's so much leading edge research going there, and the students, the young people, are really impressive. So being part of that, it was very important. Come back to the tough talking again. I can remember after my first meeting, the previous vice chancellor introduced me to somebody saying, you know, this is Moira Hamlin. She actually asked a question in her first board meeting before I realised that was not part of the culture. I was used to the sort of parish council meetings like Zoom that happened recently. And it took us a while to understand each other. But Bristol was very important in looking at the mental health of students. And unfortunately, as people know, we had some problems. And one of the things that gave me a lot of satisfaction is that when I left recently, the Vice Chancellor thanked me for my input in helping them develop their mental health services for students, which I think are in much better shape now.
Thank you, Moira. That was really a rewarding time that you had there. And a lot of us know something about what went on at Bristol University. But Moira, I hardly dare ask, but what do you do in your spare time? Do you have any spare time?
Not much. We have a home in South Africa and we spend a lot of time there. And the kind of things I've been interested in, Mark and I were co-founders of setting up an arts festival in our village in Somerset. We used to be very involved in Hay Festival. And we had a Hamlin lecture there for 10 years with some incredible people that we were able to meet. In fact, I can tell you one funny story of that. We had people like Carl Bernstein, Nadine Gordimer, Harry Belafonte, and Bishop Tutu was one. And the year we had Bishop Tutu, I had booked a holiday by mistake. So instead of meeting the most important one of those people, we had to ask our son to meet him instead.
And Moira, just let's bring us right up to date, because although moving to Cheltenham, or just outside Cheltenham, it wasn't horses that brought you the festival, but I do know that you have a love of horse racing and have had or still have horses that you race. Is that right?
Yes. Luckily, my daughter and family live just outside Cheltenham, which is why we moved here, to be near them and our granddaughter. But it was lucky for me because I do love horses, and I've been lucky enough to have a horse since about, you know, for the last 20 years. And I've even had a winner at Cheltenham, although not at the festival. We live in hope. And my current horse had a good win at Ascot in the middle of December. So I live in hope like most racehorse owners.
Thank you, Moira. Well, we look forward to enjoying your company and hearing more anecdotes about your life when we can open the new club again. But we want to thank you for giving your time and bringing your many talents in support of the new club. So, Moira, finally, can I just ask you to choose a piece of music to play us out of the interview?
Okay. Well, the piece of music I'm going to choose is You'll Never Walk Alone. And the reason it's important to us is that when our daughter was young, she was quite ill with lung problems. And we used to sing this to her for years to comfort her. And when she got married in our home in South Africa a few years ago, unbeknown to Mark, she had switched the music for the wedding. And as he was walking her down through the garden to the place for the ceremony, this piece of music came on. And poor man, he was quite undone by it. And it was a very special moment for all of us.
Hold your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of a storm, there's a golden sky and the sweet silver sound of the love. Walk on.